Now we're holding the top page Chof Beis in Sanhedrin, the top of the page, middle voice Mem Hei. Page Chof Beis in Sanhedrin, the paragraph labeled Daf Lamed. Having talked about these the matters of Aedus and all, so it talks about cases where a person, before he passes away, tells his children that such and such money belongs to Pliny. When do we believe him? When do we not? What if somebody else comes and tells them that your father said this money belongs to Pliny? When do we believe him at not? And then when not? And then we have another case. The Gemara says, suppose a person was worried about, he's concerned, he's trying to find money that he knows his father left him, but he doesn't know where it is. And the Bala Chaloim, which Rashi says means the Sar, the Malach, who brings people dreams at night, came to him in a dream, and then the Bala Chaloim tells him, there's X amount of money, the Mokim Pliny Hain, and you'll find them in such and such a place. But you should know it's money of Maiser Sheni, so you can't just use it for your own purposes. Does he have to believe what the Bala Chaloim said, that it's Maiser Sheni money and therefore it's off limits to him, except to do what you do with Maiser Sheni money? So the Gemara says, Zehoya Maisa, such a case actually happened, but Omru, and the Chachamim said, you don't have to worry about it. Divrei Chaloim Asloy Malin Vlemeridin. Dreams neither bring up nor bring down. In other words, dreams always have at least some element of nonsense in them. Therefore, even if, for example, the Bala Chaloim told you it's exactly X amount of money and it's exactly such and such a place, and you found that exact amount in that exact place, that doesn't mean you have to accept the part that it's Maisa Sheni money. You can assume that it's holding money and use it for whatever you want. So there is quite a bit of discussion about this point. So Taka, why is it? What do you mean? We often have. Now it is true. There are some times when the Gemara says that we ignore dreams and stam dvarim betalim. On the other hand, we sometimes say that every dream has some dvarim betalim in it. So fine, we can say the true part of the dream was the amount and the place, and the dvarim betalim is the maaser sheni. But the fact is, we do find some places where the Gemara says we should take dreams seriously. The Tashbitz late Rishon in Nerub Shimon of Samach Duran has a truva on the subject. There's a number of places where this whole issue is discussed about what we say as far as dreams, yes or no. So the Tashbitz has a truva on the subject. The scenario the case was that somebody had had a dream. That somebody had had a dream that some people had been put in chayrim, and the question is, do we have to do anything about it? So the Tashbitz has a truva on the subject. So first he says, you know what, maybe Bala Chaloim over here doesn't mean, like Rashi is saying, the Malach that brings dreams to people. Maybe it means, Parshat, that Reuben had a dream, and he told Shimon that I saw in a dream that the money is in this and this place, and it's this and this amount, etc. So then Shimon doesn't have to believe Reuben necessarily, because Mela, if it was my own dream, maybe I'd have to take it seriously, but if it was somebody else's dream, lav dafka. They tell a story of a guy who goes to his rebbe, and he says, I had a dream that a bunch of chassidim accepted me as my rebbe, as their rebbe. Should I start praving rebbe's rebbe? And the rebbe tells him, you know, if the chassidim had the dream that you're going to be their rebbe would be one thing, but if you had the dream, doesn't mean much. So that's the thing. So the Tashbitz first says, maybe Bala Chalom means the master of the dream, as in the other person who had the dream and then came and told you. But then he says, no, Bala Chaloi may mean, like Rashi says, it means an actual Malach. However, he says, the fact is, the Gemara in Brachos, there's a whole sugya in Brachos about dreams, and the Gemara establishes over there that there's a difference between dreams that come through a Malach or through a shed. Dreams that come through a malach have validity to them. Ones that come through a shed is meaningless. So the Tashbitz explained, what does that actually mean? How are you supposed to tell whether a dream came through a malach or a shed? So he says basically a malach and a shed is the Gemara's way of expressing, you can have a person who's healthy in mind and in body, and his thoughts are clean and so forth. So then when he has a dream, then attack means something. As opposed, that would be called a dream that comes through a malach. As opposed to a shed, a dream that comes through a shed would mean the person is unhealthy or the person has all kinds of machshavas zoras or things like that. Then it means it's meaningless. Don't worry about it. So he goes on to talk about the relevance of that as far as the case that was brought to him. But in that case, that's a case where we would say divrei chalom esleimalan v'leimeridin. You can attribute that at least some part of this dream came from a shed, came from some ravings in your mind or whatever, and therefore you don't have to worry about it. Okay. Further on, it talks about the point that the Mishnah says that after the Balei Din leave the Beis Din Shtibel, one of the Dayanim is not allowed to tell, now you have one guy won, one guy lost. So imagine one of the Dayanim is going to go over to the guy who lost and says, you know what, I was actually on your side. I was actually arguing in your favor, but I got outvoted, so don't hold it against me. So the Mishnah says you can't do that. That's an example of Rechilus. So the Gemara mentions in this connection, so how do you avoid that? The fact is, if the Balei Din are there when the Dayanim are arguing it back and forth, then they're going to know who argued what. So Tanya, Rabbi Nechemi Oymer. So Rabbi Nechemi says, "Tachoyim in Hogan from the Kiyah Hadas Yerushalayim." This was the minhag of the pure-minded people of Yerushalayim, as we learned this expression, the Kiyah Hadas in Yerushalayim at the beginning of the parak, also a few days ago. These are people who go lefnim meshuras hadin. In other words, meikra din, there's not necessarily anything wrong with the Balei Din being, or at least the edim being there while the dayanim are deliberating. But they want to go the extra mile and make sure that there's no possibility that the Balei Din are going to know who was in favor and who was against them, respectively. So machnisin lebalei dinin, they would bring in the Balei Din of shemin dvereim, and they would hear what each of them has to say. But machnisin edim, then they bring in the edim of shemin dvereim, and we hear what the edim have to say. Umatziyin oisam lochutz, then we send everybody out. So none of the Balei Dinim and none of the edim are present while the dayanim are deliberating. V'noisim v'dover, and then they would deliberate and then argue back and forth who's zakai, who's chayev, etc. And then at the end they would bring in the Balei Din and announce the verdict. This way, the Balei Din and the Edim have no way of knowing which Dayanim were in favor versus which were against. You do actually have, the Gemara goes on to talk about, there can be cases where the Balei Din is entitled to a written record of why they decided against him. It's called Mehechem Dantuni. So then even then, the Gemara says what you should really do is you should have that such a thing should be written and signed on behalf of the whole Beis Din. You're not going to have the Lahavdol and Goyish courts. Sometimes you have, like in the Supreme Court, you have an opinion that was signed by X number of justices, and then you'll have a dissent that was written by one or two or whatever. So in a proper Beis Din, you're really not supposed to have that, for the reason that we're saying over here. With that said, I don't know, sometimes nowadays you do actually find where Bati Dinim will do that kind of thing, where some of the Dayanim will write an opinion one way and others will write an opinion the other way. How they do it in keeping with this Gemara, I'm not sure. But, okay.
The litigants.
Ruben argues that Shimon owes him money or whatever the case is, yeah.
So we have
we don't want the judges to walk out. They have to sit there to deliberate. We don't want the Balei Din. No, that's the point. Hold on. The point is that we don't. We have once they hear Reuven's argument, Shimon owes me money on the grounds that such and such, and Shimon says, I don't owe him the money on the grounds that such and such, and Reuven brings his edim, and they say, we can tell you that Shimon owes the money because such and such, and Shimon brings his edim, and so on and so forth. After Beis Din has heard all of that, they send them all out so that they can deliberate without anybody knowing who's arguing what among the Dayanim themselves. Because where are the Dayanim supposed to sit? It's their Beis Din Shtibel. We're talking about the Beis Din Shtibel. We're talking about in their office. Yeah. Okay.
Chambers.
Yeah, their chambers, yeah. Okay. Further on, the Gemara talks about two machloikas tanoim that are relevant to the matter of edus. One of them is the question, does it have to be that the two edim saw the same thing at the same time? Now, by din and nefashis, yes. You can't have, for example, that one ed is going to say that he saw Reuven killing Shimon today, and the other one's going to say that he saw Reuven killing Shimon tomorrow. In the next parak, we're going to talk about such edus is not valid. But with din and mominus, for example, you could have one ed saying that he saw Reuven lending Shimon the money, Today, and another one says he saw him lending it to him tomorrow. Well, Manashach, then Shimon owes that at least that amount of money. Maybe he owes twice, but at least he owes once. You can also have one of them is testifying that he saw the actual loan, and the other one was there for the Haidah, when Shimon admitted in the presence of Edom that he owes the money, etc. So you have Machloikas, does that work? You have Machloikas between Rabbi Shur ben Korcha and the Chachamim, whether that's necessary or not, whether it's necessary that they both saw the same thing or not. Rabbi Shur ben Korcha holds that no, the Chachamim hold that yes. Then you have another machlokas between Rav Nosson and the Chachamim. What about as far as coming to Beis Din? Do the two Edom have to come to Beis Din and testify one after the other, or can it be that they come even on different days or something? Rav Nosson holds it's fine, and the Chachamim hold that it's not. So the Gemara tells the following story in this connection. Reb Shimon ben Yochim have a mishtakid aleid Reb Yosi ben Chanina. Reb Shimon ben Yochim was very diligent. He really wanted badly. He was trying to make every effort about Reb Yosi ben Chanina lemismeche to give him smicha. V'lo kamistaya milsa, but it wasn't being helped min hashemayim, as we had in the first parak. There was a whole thing over there about smicha and some of the details of it. You need a minimum of three chachamim to be present for it, and you need a number of other things in order for smicha to happen. And every time that Reb Shimon ben Yochim was trying to get his bashtus Reb Yosi ben Chanina was a Talmud, was trying to arrange that he should get smicha, every time something came up and it didn't work out. So Yom Echad have a Yosef Kameh de Reb Yochanan. One day Reb Shimon ben Yochim was sitting as a Talmud in front of Reb Yochanan. Omer lahu, so Reb Yochanan says to the Talmudim, Mi ikedi yada halacha k'Reb Yosi ben Korcha oloi. Does anybody here know whether the halacha is like Reb Shimon ben Korcha or not? So can we have the Edim saw things at saw it two different times, and we can accept their edus? Reb Shimon Yochim Dein Yoda. So Reb Shimon Yochim says to Reb Yechanan, this one, and he points to his Talmud, Reb Yosi ben Chanina, he at this point is only Yosi ben Chanina because he doesn't have smicha yet, but he knows. Omalei, lema easy. So Rabbi Shor, so Rabbi Yechanan says, okay, well then go ahead, let him say. The word easy can have two different meanings. Some of the Rishonim explain that it means, like in English we say then. So then let him say it. The other possibility is that easy means my friend. So lema easy, so my friend, let him say what he needs to say. Omalei, so Rabbi Shimon Yochim says, lismechei ma'abereisha. Rabbi Yechanan first give him smicha, and then he'll speak up and say what he needs to say. So here's where Reb Shimon Yochim finally has his opportunity to get smicha to arrange to manipulate that his Talmud should get smicha. Okay, samchei so Reb Yochanan gave him smicha. Omalei, then he says,
basically testing him.
We know already that first of all, Reb Shimon Yochim is vouching for him, so that's good enough. But besides, that's basically what it is. We know if his Rebbe is vouching for him, that's apparently good enough that we know we can give him smicha. Yeah. Omalei. Besides, you know, we can see over here that Rabbi Yosi ben Chanina had been all the time in the Beis Medrash. He's a Talmud of Rabbi Yochanan, but apparently Rabbi Yochanan had seen him around the Beis Medrash enough to know what he's made of. Okay. So he says, now my son, my Talmud, tell me what exactly did you hear? Amalei, so Rabbi Yosi ben Chanina says, Kach Shamaiti, this is what I heard from my Rebbeim, Shemoyer Rabbi Yosef ben Korcha l'Rab Nosson, that you should know, Rabbi Yosef ben Korcha, who holds that you don't require the two Edim to have seen the same thing, he agrees with Rab Nosson that the two Edim don't have to testify and based in at the same time either. And since we know, as the Gemara established earlier, that the halacha is like Reb Nosson, then that means necessarily the halacha has to be like Reb Yosef ben Korcha as well. So Reb Yechanan says, well, zehu tzrachti, is this what I needed? You're not telling me any chiddush. Hashto ma ikur ri'iyah bahadi hadodi, om Reb Yosef ben Korcha loy ba'inen. If the actual seeing at the same time Reb Yosef ben Korcha is saying is not necessary, agodim boya, would it need to be said that they don't need to say it together in Beis Din? They, after all, they don't speak over each other in Beis Din. They're going to be saying one after the other. So of course Reb Yosef ben Korcha agrees with Reb Nosson. There's no chiddush in that. That doesn't tell us in the end whether the halacha is like Reb Yosef ben Korcha or not. Nevertheless, Amalei, Rabbi Yochanan tells him, Hoyo v'alisa, once you've come up, once you've already been given smicha, lo say that you want us to go down. We won't rescind your smicha. Omer Rav Zeira, Shema Amina. So Rav Zeira says, we can deduce from this story, Gavra Rabba, that a great person, like Rav Yosef Bar Chanina, Talmid Chacham, given the Samech, or the Istimich Samech, once he's been given the Smicha, even if it was under mistaken premises, then the Smicha is still valid. Now, we're not talking about if the guy is completely unqualified to get Smicha, then for sure we don't say that the Smicha is valid. But here we're talking about Rav Yosef Bar Chanina was, after all, a Talmid Chacham, who is of the caliber to get smicha, and we see his Rebbe of Shimon Yochim had been trying all this time, it just wasn't working out. So therefore, so once, even if it turned out that Rabbi Yochanan gave it to him, thinking that he's going to tell him some chiddush, and it turns out it wasn't much of a chiddush, nevertheless, he is worthy of smicha, and we're not going to take it away from him. Further on this topic about making sure that the Balei Din, that the litigants don't know which Dayan was arguing in their favor and when not. And again, the Mishnah had said that the Dayan himself can't go to one of them and say, you know what, I was arguing in your favor, but my ass said, what can I do that I got outvoted? So turn on bottom, we learn in a Braisa. How do we know? When the Dayan leaves Beistin, Shalor Yoima, he shouldn't say, Ani Mezakeh, I would have declared you innocent. It's only my colleagues, the other Dayanim, who declared that you're guilty, that you're liable. Avo ma esa, but what could I do? Shechaveirai rabu alai, that my friends, that my colleagues, the other Chachamim, outvoted me. How do you know he can't do that? Tamad Loima, lo yiseilech rochel ba'amecha. The Pasuk says, don't go as a talebearer among your people. And here he's going and telling tales and telling Lashon Hara on the other Dayanim. You still need, you might have thought that. No, you might have thought that maybe he is entitled to clear his own name. You know, after all, the guy is going to hold it against him. What do you mean you declared me guilty? Don't you realize I have this and this and this? So maybe he should be entitled to exonerate himself to the other guy. No, let's say lecharach
obamacha. That's supposed to be afraid. What anyone's going to say. They can't be afraid of it.
Right, the Dayanim are not allowed to be afraid of what anybody says, but still, it's not a matter of afraid, it's a matter of still the guy's going to hold it against me, he's going to resent me, whatever you might think, that maybe as a matter of, like, so you want to avoid, like, Sisna, Sechicha, blah, 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 something like that, whatever. So, and you have another pasuk expressing this idea, Hoylech Rochel Megalas Soid. What is a Hoylech Rochel? What is a person who goes and tells tales, Megalas Soid, somebody who's going and telling a secret? So here he's telling a secret from Beis Din, which he has no business telling, so therefore he's branded a Hoylech Rochel. Why do we need two psukim? Eitz Yosef brings from Toras Chaim, because it's one thing normally what is a rochel, what does Loisevach rochel ba'amecha mean? Means when you have a person is peddling Lashon Hara from one place to another, from one person to another. That's the classical definition of Loisevach rochel ba'amecha, is that Reuven goes to Shimon and tells, do you know what Levi has been saying about you? That would be Loisevach rochel. So you would think maybe this is not that kind of thing, but you wouldn't know that maybe this kind of thing, revealing a secret like that, how do you know? It's Hoylech Rochel. So nevertheless, that's why you need the second pasuk to say Hoylech Rochel. Megala Soy, just telling a secret that you're not supposed to, is already part of Hoylech Rochel as well. So the Gemara tells in this connection, Ahu Talmida, the Apik, or the Nafik Alei Kola, the Gali Milsa, there was a Talmid who, the Apik Milsa would mean that he himself revealed the matter, that the Nafik Alei Kola, the Gali, which is the Girsa in the printed Gemara, is that there was a rumor going around about him, the Gali Milsa, that he revealed the matter, the Itmar, Be Medrash, the Rabami, that had been said in the Beis Medrash of Rabami, which was supposed to be kept under wraps, Bosser Esther and the Tauten Shnin. It was 22 years later. So maybe this Talmud figured already, you know, it's old news and there's no problem revealing it. So he went ahead, so he went ahead and blabbed it. And it was something derogatory against somebody else. And Rab Ami expelled him from the Beis Medrash. The Achri Zalei, and he announced on him, or the printed Gemara has the Girsa Omar. He said, "Dein Goli Razayahu." This guy is a guy who tells. This is a guy who blabs secrets. In other words, a Talmud of the Beis Medrash is expected to know there are certain things that remain within the walls of the Beis Medrash, and they're not meant to be revealed outside. Even Yaakov and Eitz Yosef both point out there is a halacha that when you have something that's known by three or more people, then it's not really considered lashon hara, because then already there's a certain piercing to it. So even Yaakov points out there's a difference between something which is not really derogatory per se, but something like that has, it's a vak lashon hara. For example, to say that Pliny always has a fire going in his house for cooking, which in and of itself is an innocuous kind of thing, but like there's like a subtext there. The guy's a spendthrift, he's wasting his money always on barbecues and whatever. So then that kind of thing, if three people know about it already, is not considered so much lashon hara, as opposed to here. We're talking about something that was outright full-fledged lashon hara. So therefore, even though it was 22 years later, so nevertheless, he has no business telling it. And therefore, Rav Ami said such a person doesn't belong in the Beis Medrash. At the end of the perek, it deals a little bit with the case. Now you have like this: you have certain kinds of cases in halacha. You have, when it comes to monetary cases, you have two major categories in halacha: dinim mominus and dinim knosis. Dinim mominus are the regular kind of thing. A person calls X amount of hezek to somebody else, and he has to pay X amount. That's dinim mominus. Then you have dinim knosis, which is where the Torah says to pay an amount different than the actual damage. It can be a certain fixed amount. For example, the Torah tells us that a person's shur killed somebody else's eved, he pays a fixed 30 sloyim, regardless of the value of the eved. That would be an example of a knas. Chatzi nezek, what do you call it, teshlum kefal, teshlum abal hamisha, various things like that are all under the category of knosis. Now, the Gemara establishes at the beginning of the Masechta, and again discusses it here, that Bote Dinim and Bavel do not have the jurisdiction to deal with such cases, because when the Pasuk talks about Dinim Knosses, the expression is that you have to have Elikim judge them. At the beginning of the Masechta, the Gemara explained that Elikim means Dayonim, who have the original Smicha, Ishmi Piish, going back to Moshe Rabbeinu, and that Smicha can be given only in Eretz Yisrael. So therefore, the Dayonim and Bavel did not have such Smicha. However, the Gemara talks about you can have a case where there's a case of dinik knosis comes up in Bavel, actually, the Gemara at the beginning of the Masechta talks about that even among dinim mominus, but the dinim outside Eretz Yisrael don't have jurisdiction over all of them. It depends whether it's something common or something less common. There's a number of different considerations that are involved. The beginning of Choshen Mishpat talks all about it. Anyway, but you can have a case where so the Yonim of Bavel can't deal with it, but they have the Baal Din, the other litigant, can say in that case, then within I demand that we go to Eretz Yisrael to have the case judged by the Dayanim over there. Who will be able to judge the case of Knas, and then that way I'll be able to collect what's coming to me. So the Gemara talks about that he has a valid point in the world. We're going to require the other guy to go with him to Eretz Yisrael, to the Bate Dinim over there, to deal with the matter. So the Gemara tells the following story. They sent a message from Eretz Yisrael to Bavel, to Mar Ukva. Mar Ukva was one of the Chachamim over there. He was also the Av Beis Din. In Bavel. So they sent him a message, the Dizivle Kibar Basia, to the one who has a glow like Bar Basia Shlom. They sent him greetings, and here was the message. Why are they calling him the one who has a glow like Bar Basia? So Rashi explains Bar Basia means Moshe Rabbeinu. There's two reasons. Either we call him Bar Basia, as in Basia was his foster mother. So Bar Basia means the son of Basia, as in Moshe Rabbeinu. The other possibility, Rashi says that the word is not Basia, but rather Bote, his house. Bar Bote is like in Hebrew, Ben Bayis, the one who's like a member of Hashem's household, which again refers to Moshe Rabbeinu, B'chol Beisi Nemonu. So either way, they're giving Ma'ukva a compliment that he has a glow and a shine like Moshe Rabbeinu. Now, why is that? First of all, Rashi says, because he was a great Talmud Chacham. Chochmas Adam, Torah Ponav, the Chochma of a person in Torah, makes his face shine and glow. So like Moshe Rabbeinu had rays of light coming from his face after he came down from Har Sinai the third time, the same way they're complimenting Ma'ukva that he has the same kind of glow as Moshe Rabbeinu. Rashi then brings a very interesting explanation from a Sefer Agoda. This Ma'ukva was actually a Baal Teshuva. What had happened was, it actually says, at one point, he had a tremendous taiva for a certain woman, so much that he was feeling lovesick for her. He was getting very sick from the fact that he loves her, and he's not going to be able to do anything with her. Later on in the Masechta, actually, we have a very similar story about somebody who, like that, he got a certain taiva for a woman in Hela Libertina, and his wife was in danger, and the question was whether we can do anything, or whether it's Yehorek Val Yaver. Actually, Rabbeinu Nissim actually has, in one of his Sfarim, actually connect these two stories. He says that the Ma'ukva of our story is the same as the unnamed person in that story over there. He also gives the woman a name. He calls her Hannah. He also actually connected, interestingly, also, there's a story in Menachos about a guy who hears of a famous Zoino who charges a huge fee, and he decides, you know what, come what may, I gotta be with her, and he sends her this enormous amount of money, and then he's about to go to be Mizana with her, and his tzitzis slap him in the face, and he stops, and she asks him what's going on, and he explains to her that tzitzis were like four Aiden warning me, what do you think you're doing? The upshot is he left, and she ended up finding out where he's from and becoming a Gioras and marrying him. So Rabbeinu Nissim actually connects that story with this as well. In any case, so this Ma'ukva then, again, he's sick with his love that he loves this woman, and he can't do anything about it. She's actually an Ashes Ish. Continues the story, continues that. That's what we're talking about, yeah. At one point, then, this woman had to borrow money from him. And she was so desperate, and Rabbeinu Nissim adds more details, her husband was in jail, and so on and so forth, she was in such a desperate situation that she was willing to even, you know, if that's what it takes, I'll submit to you, I'll be mezana with you. Well, he kept his Yetzer Hara under control, and did not, and was not mezana with her, and let her go, and then gave her the money, and she left without anything having happened. So now he was cured of his lovesickness. From then on, whenever he would walk in the street, there would be a light, min hashamayim, that was shining over his head. So therefore, now they call him, l'deziv leilab kabad basya, you have a glow over you as a result of this amazing tshuva that you did, like Moshe Rabbeinu does. But he got the light after he had. Now when he became a Baal Teshuva, now when he controlled his Yetzer, when he held back his Yetzer Hara under such extreme circumstances, then he deserves to have a Ruchnius Tikkun light shining over him from then on. And therefore they say on him L'Deziv Leila Kabar Basya. Ben Yehoyada says, in fact, that's why. So why are they calling him Bar Basya? Why not call him Moshe? Why not call him any of the other titles that Moshe Rabbeinu has? That's why, because Basya herself was that kind of thing. She started out as the princess of Egypt and the Vedas of Adizara, and then she transformed her life the same way as Ma'ukva transformed his. So Rashi points out there's a Gemara in Shabbos that refers to someone to a Reish Galusa named Ukvan Bar Nechemia, and the Gemara says that he's also called Ramnosan Tzutzisa. Tzutzisa means that he had a fringe of fire above him constantly. So this is the same. So it actually says it's the same person. With that said, though, based on what Rabbeinu Nissim says, and actually Tobas Tanoim Mamiroyim discusses in some detail, it might be that it's not Ma'ukva, as in the Amorah, who we find in many places in Shas, but rather Ukvan, as the Gemara has it in Shabbos over there, who was a Reish Galusa from a different generation. We have the names ran in the family of the Rosh Galusa, the governors of the Jews in Babel, just like they often do in Jewish families, and so there were several Ukvans throughout the generations. Rabbeinu Nissim actually places the story in the time of Rabbi Akiva. And Rabbi Yosef says in the Gemara, Rabbi Yosef, a couple hundred years after Rabbi Akiva, says in our generation there's also someone of this caliber. So told us Tanoim Amiroyim argues that it may be that there was more than one Reish Galusa in that family throughout the generations, named Ukvan, where this kind of thing happens, that they were able to control their Yetzer Hara under tremendous pressure like that. In any case, it says it wouldn't necessarily be Ma'ukva, who we find in many places in Shas, the contemporary of Shmuel. So neither in Rabbi Akiva's times nor in Rabbi Yosef's times. Okay, be that as it may. Anyway, so they're telling him, so this is their greeting to him. Here's the content of their letter. They write from Eretz Yisrael. Ukvan HaBavli Kovo Kadamono. Ukvan HaBavli, again, if the Reish Galusa himself, if the subject of the story over here, is also named Ukvan, and there's a different Ukvan from Babel, has complained before us in Eretz Yisrael. He says, Yumia Ochi Hever Elias Aderch. My brother Yumia made the way no good for me. So what does that mean? It actually says a couple of explanations. It can mean shesirsa. It can mean that he's complaining that his brother Yumia made him infertile. Then, you know, Yoda points out it may not have been that he, were, you know, what he did an operation on him or something. It may have been that he gave him some kind of potion that made him infertile. And therefore, he's complaining in Basin that they should be giving the guy Malchus for it. Rashi's second explanation is that he behaved with me improperly, that it's a matter of dinim mominus. He cheated me, he whatever it is exactly, in some matter of dinim mominus. In a case where it wouldn't be momin, it would be knas. Marsha says a third possibility, it can be that these two brothers, Ukvan and Yumia, inherited a field from their father and split it between them. Now, the Gemara tells us in Bava Basra that like this. Now, you may have the field has paths through it. You have to get to various places in the field, so you have various areas that are designated as paths that the owner of the field himself can use to get to various places in the field. Now, when the Yoshim inherit the field and split it, those paths are no longer valid anymore. They have to make new arrangements among themselves that, you know, I own this part of the field, but you want to be able to get through this, my part, to be able to reach your part, so we have to arrange between ourselves and compensate each other and whatever in order to have paths for each one of us. So now what happens is, Marsha explained that what was happening over here is Ukvan is complaining that my brother Yumia took away the field, took away the path in the field that he's forcing this path through my field, and he's not allowing me a path through his. Okay, in any case, so the Basin in Eretz Yisrael is writing to Mar Ukvan in Bavel. This is the case that was brought before us. This Ukvan from Bavel came to Eretz Yisrael and is complaining about what Yumia did to him. So the Imruloi, So we should tell him that Yumia, who is the Baal Din over here, he's the Nitzba, he's being claimed against in Basin, Hashi'uhu, convince him or force him, the Yuropanena B'Tveria, that they should see our face in Tveria. In other words, he's going to have to be forced to travel from Babel to Eretz Yisrael to answer the summons from the Basin in Eretz Yisrael in Tveria, and for Ukvan to be able to lay his claim out in Basin against him, and the judgment will take place as it's supposed to. So the Gemara says, Hogufakasha, well, you seem to have a contradiction in what the Beis Din and Eretz Yisrael is saying. Amrit Imruloi. First they're telling Mar Ukva, tell him, which implies that Mar Ukva has jurisdiction in this kind of case. Alma Dainuhu Atun, which in effect they're saying, tell him that he has to come to Beis Din, to your Beis Din, Mar Ukva, in Bavel, and he has to submit to whatever you decide there in Bavel. But then you're telling him you have to force him to come see our faces, to come appear in front of the Beis Din in Tveria. So now they're saying it's not enough. Don't judge him in Bavel, you Mar Ukva. Send him to Eretz Yisrael. So what is the Beis Din in Eretz Yisrael telling Mar Ukva to do? You judge the case yourself or force him to come to Eretz Yisrael. Ela Hochi Kama. So it must mean what they meant was, Imrulei, when they say to him, it means Dainuhu Atun, first you Mar Ukva judge him, E Tsayas, if he's willing to listen to what you, the Dayonim in Bavel say, Tsayas, then good, he listens and we don't need to do anything further. The Eloi, if he's not willing to obey what you based in Bavel decide, Hashiuhu, then you're going to have to force him, the Yira Panena B'Tveria, and he's going to have to see our face in Tveria. In other words, he's not getting out of it one way or the other. Either he's going to have to accept the verdict of your Basin, or he's going to have to So that's one explanation of what they mean. Rav Ashi says another way we can explain what they meant was dinik knosis hava. This wasn't a matter of dinim mominus, which can be judged by a Beis Din in Bavel. This was a case of dinik knosis, where again, like we said before, such cases cannot be judged by dayanim in Bavel. That requires smicha ish mipiyish, which is given only in Eretz Yisrael. Earlier in the Masechta, it talks about you can have somebody who got smicha in Eretz Yisrael and then travels to Bavel and can continue judging dinei knosis over there, fine, as long as he has reshus for that, fine. But we're not talking about over here. Mar Ukva had never been in Eretz Yisrael and had never received smicha there. So Rav Ashi says dinei knosis haba over Bavel, like Dayonu, dinei knosis in Bavel to begin with. You can't judge dinei knosis, so therefore Mar Ukva's based in, if we look at it that way, has no jurisdiction over the case in the first place. So why did the based in Eretz Yisrael send a message to Mar Ukva saying Imru, that you should tell him, Imruloi, tell him, implying that you have the ability to judge the case? That was only how the Shochalei Lahochi could be lachlit kovid l'ma ukva. They want to show kovid to Mar Ukva as a distinguished Tamar Chacham, and as it actually says, a great Baal Tshuva, and therefore make it sound as though he has the ability to judge the case, but really he'll read between the lines and realize, and this is Dinei Knosis, and I have no ability to do anything with it, and the only thing I can do is force this Yumia to head to Eretz Yisrael for the case to be judged there.
Okay.
Doesn't matter whether they learned the whole Torah or Kula. The Gemara explains at the beginning of the Masechta. That to judge Dine Knossos, you need to have Smicha Ish Mipi Ish back to Moshe Rabbeinu, because the Pasuk says, and Dine Knossos, the Pasuk says, Elikim. That's because in Babel, you couldn't give such Smicha. Smicha Ish Mipi Ish. One of the rules of that Smicha Ish Mipi Ish is it can be granted only in Eretz Yisrael. That's one of the rules of it. That's the rule. There's logic. I mean, it's earlier in the Masechta, in the first parak, when it talks all about Smicha, it talks about why that's so. But that's how it is. It can only be given in Eretz Yisrael. So again, a Dayan who has it from Eretz Yisrael and travels to Chutzlar, it's fine. He continues to have it. But a Dayan who was never in Eretz Yisrael and never received Smicha there, then not. We're not talking about, by the way, the Smicha that we have nowadays. That's something else. That's the Smicha we have nowadays. It doesn't go back to Moshe Rabbeinu. It was invented in the time of the late Rishonim as basically a way to weed out who's capable of a Paskin and Halacha and who is not. There's the famous thing where Rabbi Yaakov, when my son was doing the shiur the last couple of weeks, he was telling over the story of how Rabbi Yaakov de Rab, a Rebbe of the Beis Yosef about 500 years ago, tried to reestablish Smicha in Eretz Yisrael, and it became a whole huge controversy. It lasted for a couple of generations. The Beis Yosef himself, and the Al Shachar Kodesh, and the Arizal, and a number of others got the Smicha, but eventually it died out again. So right now we're waiting until one of the arguments that was brought to bear on it is we don't need a Beis Din nowadays to be reestablished Smicha when Eliyahu Hanavi comes. He has Smicha from back when he was alive. At first he was the head of a Beis Din, so he had Smicha Ish Mipi Ish, so he can give Smicha to the people who need it when Mashiach comes, when the Sanhedrin is ready to be reestablished. Okay. Echad Dinim Momenus Perek Ruvi. So the parak begins by talking about the distinctions between dinim mominus and dinim nefashis. There's a number of differences in procedure between them. But the Mishnah says, echad dinim mominus ve'echad dinim nefashis v'drisho v'hakira. With both dinim mominus and dinim nefashis, you need to have cross-examination of the edim. Drisha and Chakira are different types of questions that they ask them. In the next parak, it goes into details. Drisha and Chakira is they ask them about the time and place where the thing happened and the basic facts of it. He lent him X amount, or he broke Shabbos with this malacha, or whatever. That's all included in Drisha and Chakira. Then, in addition, we'll learn later on. There's also something called Bedikas, where they ask them different other side details about the setting and all. Anyway, so both Dinin and Foshes and Dinin Mominus need Drisha. So the Gemara asks, Dinim Mominus be in Drisha v'Chakira? You're telling me by Dinim Mominus you require this careful cross examination of the Edim? But we have a contradiction, because the Braisa says that you don't need Drisha v'Chakira because it's called Shalatino Delas Bifnei Loivin. You don't want to lock the door in front of borrowers. In other words, what's going to happen? Reuven approaches Shimon and asks him for a loan. Shimon is going to say, fine, but and what happens if I lend you and I have Edim? When the Edim come to Beis Din, what happens if they make a mistake and then Beis Din ends up throwing out the Edus and then I'm out my money? So therefore, I don't want to lend you in the first place. So therefore, we're saying that you don't need Drish V'Chakira for Dinim Mominus in order to make it easier for the Malva to collect. Amar Rav Chanina, Ech Dvar Torah, Ech Dinim Mominus, Ech Dinim Nefashos, V'Drish V'Chakira. The answer is, says Rav Chanina, now, Minat Torah, yes, they both require Drisha v'Chakira. Shenema Mishpat Echad, Shenema, also as it says in the Mishnah, Shenema Mishpat Echad, Yolachem, as the Pasuk says, there should be one judgment for you, which implies that all kinds of judgments, Dinim Mominus and Dinim Nefashos, have to have the same rules. So Rav Chanina says the same thing, Shenema Mishpat Echad, Yolachem. Or Ma Tam Omer Dinim Mominus, Labirin and Drisha v'Chakira, Kadesh L'Eternal Delos Rishnei Loivin, so like we said, so as not to lock the door in front of borrowers. This way, in other words, a person wants to borrow money, the lender is more willing to lend him because he knows there's a much better chance that he'll get his money back. Even if, let's say, the Edim make a mistake on a minor detail in the date or whatever, Beis Din won't throw out the Edus. So they're going to ask, by the same logic, if you're going to tell me, Shalatino Delos Rifnei Loivin, Elameata, by that logic, To Lo Yishav, or by the logic, if we're saying you don't need Dirish V'Chakira, To, then if the Beis Din ends up making a mistake in the Psat Halacha, Lo Yishamu, then they shouldn't be required to pay to compensate the losing party. Where later on in the parak, it talks about the details where sometimes, it's going to be at the bottom of this Almud, sometimes the Dayan is required to compensate the losing party where he paskin wrongly, sometimes not. But if you're saying they can't do judicial hakira, then therefore we shouldn't hold them responsible if they made a mistake. Look, if we'd cross-examined the Edom better, we might have come to a different verdict. And the answer is Koshkin, Chetunel Delos with Nerlogan. Well, in that case, all the more so, you're going to lock the door in front of borrowers because the lender is going to say that and if the Beis Din makes a mistake, then I'm for sure not getting my money back because then Beis Din will claim judicial immunity. So therefore, I don't want to lend you in the first place. So again, we want to make it as much as possible. We want to encourage people to be willing to lend, and therefore we want to make it as much as possible. We want to make a high likelihood that they'll get as high a likelihood as possible that they'll get back their money. Okay, so that's one answer whether you need judicial hakira by dinim momenes or not. Rava says a different answer. Masnisin dehachav dinik knosses. The Mishnah over here, when it says that you need judicial hakira for dinim momenes, is talking about dinik knosses. The idach, the hadoris halvoris, as opposed to the price, is talking about cases where somebody lent some, where somebody admits that he owes somebody money or he borrowed somebody. So those kinds of things. Then So when it comes to dinik knosses, there's no ne'ilas delas. The whole point with knas is that he's getting a different amount than what he actually lost. So one of those, and by definition, that doesn't happen with hodois v'havois. That happens, in fact, modi b'knas potter. A person admits that he's chayav a knas and he's potter anyhow. So by definition, knosses is not going to be, there's no ne'ilas delas, because knosses are going to be a one-off thing. One person caused a hezek to somebody else of the type where the Torah imposes a certain amount for him to pay, or less or more than the proper amount. There's no ne'ilas delas, there's no lending where the guy is going to come to ask for a loan and he's going to be refused. Therefore, we can keep to the original din Torah, says Rava, that we need judicial hakira, as opposed to hadoris v'halvois, where Reuven admits in front of Edom that he owes Shimon money from a previous business deal or loan or whatever, or where the Edom are testifying to the actual loan. We don't want too much judicial hakira because, again, we don't want to raise the possibility that the din will be thrown out and the malva will be out his money, and then he'll be reluctant to lend in the future. Knossos, we don't worry about that, and therefore we can do all the judicial hakira we want, as opposed to hodois v'halvois, we have to be concerned about that, and therefore we should be careful not to do too much judicial hakira. We need obviously basic judicial hakira, but in other words, we're not going to get into later on, for example, Torah, the Mishnah talks about, you have to ask them what year in the Shemitah cycle was it, what month was it, what day was it, etc., what hour was it, etc. So if there's the din is, if either of them says, I don't know, then we throw out the whole Eidos when there's judicial hakira. So here, we don't want to do that kind of thing. We're going to ask the Edom, for example, well, what day did you lend him money? Well, it was either the 13th or the 14th. I don't remember exactly. We don't want to throw out the whole Edos because of that. Because at least, you know, there is the basic Edos that he owes him X amount of money. So that knosses, because we're not concerned about that. How does a knas come about in the first place? Reuven's ox gored Shimon's ox, or killed Reuven's eved, or Reuven was onus or mafata Shimon's daughter, or any of various other cases where there's knosses involved. There's no halva, there's no loans involved, such that we could say there's going to be ne'ilas delas, that he's going to be reluctant to lend in the future, because there's no loan here, there's no request for a favor in the first place. In the case where Reuven or Reuven's property caused Shimon damage. So to be continued tomorrow, Beis Hashem. Yom Yom Mashiach Gola, Test 7. Now, nowadays, we're working on Avodas HaBirurim. We have to separate out the good from the bad. Therefore, so Avatareva points out in Tanya, therefore, nowadays, our Avodah of learning Torah is a matter of Birurim. It's a matter of we need to, among other things, Avatareva points out, Negeres Chavav, we have to ask questions in Torah, where every time there's a question, it means there's klippas involved that are obscuring something in Torah, and then we need to answer them, we need to delve into it, we need to horove in it, and so forth, all in order to refine out things from the klippas. But La'asid Lava, as Avatareva points out, Torah and mitzvahs will not be to create birurim, because the avodas habirurim will have been completed. It will be rather yachad yichudim or yonim yosef, to make higher and higher yichudim of levels of kedusha. And all of it will be accomplished through pnimiyas haTorah, so we'll be mekayim the mitzvahs with higher and higher kavanas, knowing the inner core of the mitzvahs and their hidden reasons. That'll be the learning Torah and the kiyum mitzvahs of the Asid Lovers. So that's when you talk about Torah Chadoshim. That's part of that point. So it means, in other words, that at that point we'll understand that all of that is Rots in the Elyon. It's like the Reb Levi Yitzchak points out, and Reb Levi Yitzchak points out in a letter to the Rebbe that, for example, sometimes the Gemara will say about something Bedusa that it's a fiction. That's not true. So Reb Levi points out it's Rotzen Elyon. It's part of Hashem's Rotzen that there's this thing in Torah, and it's also part of Rotzen Elyon that it's labeled Bedusa. So in the same way, we'll have a Reminhu when we learn a Reminhu in the Gemara when Mashiach comes. It'll mean, in other words, we'll be learning how the Rotzen Elyon results in that Reminhu. It's not a question that's obscure. Now it won't be a question anymore that's obscuring the truth from us. It'll be something else entirely. Yehudim is like you have different names of Hashem that are joined together to create different pathways for Elikus, for energy of Elikus to come into our world. We have different spirits that are joined together in different configurations. All of those are included in the concept of Yehudim. So it means, in other words, joining together things of Kedusha rather than having to break through and throw away the things of Klippa. What do you do with a yichud? So tzaddikim know what to do with them nowadays. We'll know what to do with them. Lost in love. It means that we're creating a new channel for greater energy or for greater Ur Laki to come down into our world and into ourselves. Starting a new siman in the Alter Rebbe's Shulchan Aruch, Tesvav, the dinim about moving tzitzis from one begad to another and what happens if the talus tears. So the first din is you are allowed to take tzitzis strings off one beged and put them on another beged. The Gemara mentions in a couple of places the machlokas on that subject. The halacha is that you are in fact allowed to. It's not considered a bizoyan for the mitzvah. The fact you're taking it off one beged, you might think that's a bizoyan for the original beged because you're doing it. You're putting it right away onto another beged, and therefore it's fine. It seems, Alter Rebbe seems to be implying then that if it was just you taking it off the one beged and putting him away for later on, that might tackle be a problem. If you're still using this beged, obviously if the beged itself is worn out and you plan to throw it away, then that's a whole different matter.